Believe we are live. So hey everybody, and welcome back to the sixth round post fight show with me and Eddie Mercado. Come to you guys right after the end here of UFC Vegas.
That's my bad.
Yeah.
What did you with yourself?
Allen versus Curtis 2. As much as I love listening to myself talk, I don't need that. I don't think it's like those things they do where, like, if you want to stop somebody from giving a speech in public or like protesting, then you create a system whereby their own voice is fed back to them at just like a couple second delay, and it's almost impossible to talk while hearing yourself on a very slight delay.
Noted. Hold on. Let me write.
Yeah.
Next time you start making a valid point,
I'm going to
turn my speakers on.
All right. Well, first off, so we're coming to Brendan Allen getting an upset win over Chris Curtis. We both have some feelings about that. But first off, we did get a reader question or a viewer question here. Curtis' injury was in the ring, so UFC should cover that, right? No, it is actually something that the UFC does cover. In-ring injuries are the one reliable bit of coverage that fighters tend to get.
And he was escorted, medically escorted, away from the octagon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the UFC typically does cover.
The only time that it comes up that they might not or don't is, like, if, you know, he tears his hamstring, gets it treated, and the UFC will pay for that, and, like, 3 years from now, he has, like, a knee issue from that hamstring, or the surgery fails, or stuff like that. You do hear stories of people, like, you know, Tim Sylvia's arm getting all, like, fucked up and infected from all the surgeries he had after it got broken by Frank Mir. And, like, he's still dealing with that shit. And the UFC's not paying for any of that, you know?
Is he part of the class action lawsuit, do you know?
Well, the former class action lawsuit.
The former, right, yeah.
Let me see. I have forgotten when Tim Sylvia's UFC run ended. He fought his last UFC fight in 2008, so he is not part of the class action lawsuit. That was 2010 to 2017.
Wow.
That's what he is covered. So. And there was a second lawsuit that covered 2017 on through now, but as John Nash has mentioned several times, many fighters in the more recent years have had contract clauses that state they will not be able to be part of, they cannot be part of a class action lawsuit against the UFC specifically. So
how is that legal? What?
Well, I mean, maybe it's not, but if fighters want to make it illegal, they'll have to go to court to try to do that. And that means, and they'll have to do it on an individual basis. And so you've got one fighter who's going to have to, like, challenge his contract clause in a legal fight with the UFC. And that does not go well.
It does not. I know if I was Chris Curtis, I'd be fighting for my win bonus because he won this fight.
Yeah, that's the other thing we got to say. I will say, I can understand a 48-47 Brendan Allen card. You give him round one. He won round one.
Yes.
I would give him round five because he was losing round five, but then he hurt Chris Curtis wrestling him. That leg injury, that is the result of things Brendan Allen did. If we're scoring on damage, I have to score that as damage that Brendan Allen caused.
100%.
So I got to give him round five.
There's two.
And
third round from, though, is my thing.
You can argue round four. I would. Wow. He had a couple of really dominant positions and takedowns.
He got bombed on.
The damage he incurred coming back was not so big that I can see that I couldn't see judges being swayed. That's the thing. That's the argument I'm making. Is not, I scored it for Chris Curtis. I gave it a 48-47 Chris Curtis fight. Somebody else here is saying should have been a draw. I don't understand how you could. There's no 10-8 round in that fight. I don't know.
No. Unless you're really weighing that hamstring damage.
Yeah, no.
Bit of a 10-8.
No.
Yeah, man. This is 9 for sure.
So I scored it 48-47, Chris Curtis. I thought when they said 49-46, it had to be Chris Curtis because yeah. I can see an argument for giving round 5 to Chris Curtis too. If you are looking at at the injury he sustained and saying, oh, that's a freak injury, Brendan Allen didn't really have anything to do with it, Chris Curtis won the majority of that round. Otherwise, if we're talking just other damage landed through strikes, that was mostly a Chris Curtis round. So I can see when they said 49-46, it's like, oh, well, has to be Chris Curtis then, because he won. He was the guy who like definitely won rounds. Brendan Allen very narrowly squeaked out some. But that's really the thing that kind of makes this scorecard weird, is it usually when you have a fight, I was going to say 5-round, but just when you have a fight in general, when one fighter is the only guy to clearly win rounds, they almost always win the decision. Like, if you have a 3-round fight and one guy clearly wins one and the other two are close, 9 times out of 10, the guy who had one clear round that they won is the guy that's going to win.
Go tell that to the Charrier guy.
Yeah, that was another weird one, another one for that tonight.
Yeah, man, the judges were off.
I mean,
they got a lot of stuff wrong tonight. That 32-7 for Hernandez? What? Those judges need to be drug tested. This is unacceptable. It's poor scoring.
Yeah.
49? Allen did not have... Well, let me ask you this. If you were to judge the fight as a whole...
Yes.
Who would you have awarded the victory to?
See, this is tough.
Right?
Because... I can see, you know, somebody saying pride scoring, it's Chris Curtis all day. But I don't know how to weigh that hamstring injury. Because if we're talking about what comes closest to finishing the fight, which is how, like, the whole idea of the fight as a whole pride scoring is kind of supposed to be, then Chris Curtis is the one who couldn't continue anymore. He was the one in danger of getting finished, you know?
Yeah.
And
but it's also fair to say that Curtis was closer to finishing the fight more times.
He was closer to finishing the fight more times. He had the damage over the bulk of the fight. Chris Curtis had more damage. I would say that. So if not for the injury, it would be a pretty easy pride call for Curtis. The injury does make it a little difficult just because you do have to think of, like, how do you weigh that? You know? It's the kind of thing that makes, you know, it's one of the ways I would like to see grappling and wrestling given weight. It's like, if you hurt somebody taking them down, that's for you. It's like the whole, Rodriguez, Brian Ortega thing all over again, where, you know, Ortega, his shoulder pops out defending an arm bar, and it's like, that's a submission win to me, you know? Like, you're attacking
I don't agree with that, but go ahead.
But you're attacking the arm. You should get full credit for the damage done while attacking that arm.
Yeah, in a TKO version.
Okay, whatever. TKO submission, you know.
Your vernacular is wrong, is what I'm saying.
No, if somebody verbally goes, when they're getting their arm hurt, then that's a verbal submission. You don't have to tap.
Correct.
So if something pops and he stops fighting, that's the same essential thing as a verbal submission.
The submission hold was an arm bar, which hyperextends the elbow. Ortega ripped his shoulder out. That's not a submission being pulled off on his shoulder. That's him dislocating his own shit on his own volition.
It's still submission. It's like cranking somebody's neck and their back get, you know, they pop something in their back. To me, that's still, you're putting pressure on somebody's body and something breaks.
Right? They didn't do that to themselves.
Well, he didn't do it to himself. It wouldn't have happened if the guy wasn't hanging off his arm.
He didn't pull it's his not arm like out?
He didn't not like in a vacuum. It's not like he just went out there and the arm popped out. The man had applied pressure to the body and the body broke. That's all his credit. I'm calling this
submission. Well, it is his credit. It's a TKO. Yeah.
If that's an injury that can happen in a grappling match, there are no TKOs in grappling. If that happened at the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships, they wouldn't be like, oh, and here's a magic TKO category for.
There's injury timeouts in Jiu-Jitsu. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but that's not a TKO. They don't suddenly make up a new TKO thing. There's no technical knockout in Jiu-Jitsu. Do not try to tell me there's no TKO. Don't.
I'm not sure how
that's a point to me. That's a point. Okay.
Where's my speakers?
Anyway, Chris Curtis, I think he should have had that.
I know.
But it was a good fight. You know, it was a good fight, fun fight.
Allen almost hit that Sulaw stretch.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been so cool. I'm proud of him for even going for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, unfortunately, though, for Allen, Chris Curtis just remains a really tough style matchup for him. Like, Allen's wrestling, I know he called for a title shot after this, and, like, you beat the 14th-ranked guy in your division. It's not going to happen. Well, like, the
short nose. That should have been Marvin Vettori out there.
Yeah, but it wasn't Marvin Vettori. That's, you know.
And he didn't win the fight.
But
he needs to fight Marvin Vettori.
His striking defense is still not great. His wrestling is still, you know.
But his mechanics are holding up for 5 rounds.
He is holding up better. He is able to fight through a lot. He's a tough dude. The Strickland call out he made afterward, that's a much smarter call out.
Yeah.
That's a fight he should absolutely be gunning for right now. I don't know that Strickland's going to take it because he wants to get a title shot again and very well might just for sitting around, honestly, because once Dricus du Plessis versus Adesanya is done, Strickland would be an obvious next fight for either man, especially if Adesanya won.
Well, let's wait and see what happens with Khamzat and Whitaker also.
True.
That's
true.
A sneaky dark horse. Dark horse, but the winner of that could be a number one contender's match.
Allen should be looking to try to get into whoever is left out of that circle, whether it's the loser of Khamzat Whitaker or whether it's the winner. Khamzat goes on and fights for a belt and suddenly Sean Strickland is stuck there with nothing to do. Yeah, campaign hard for the Sean Strickland fight. For Curtis, I mean, I would try to make a fight for him, but he's just got months of injury recovery coming to him. He was already saying, oh, I'm going to take some time off before he jumped on this. Now he's going to have to take some time off. You don't tear your hamstring like that.
He's up there, right? He's 36.
Yeah.
This is the worst time for him to be going through a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
Sense.
So yeah, feel for him because that'll probably keep him out until next year.
And he won this fight.
Yeah, I know. Before that, pretty fun fight. I was doing work like 10 ways, so this whole card just kind of felt like a blur to me.
Same, but it's so I thought about that and I was like, am I distracted? Am I just not paying attention? And no, it's not that thing. The fights were shit. It was a lot of the fights, it was one person trying to wrestle and then the other person defending until they broke free to strike. A lot of that dynamic play out in a lot of these fights. And there was a lot of positional controlling, like that Dumont fight. She sat there and fucking side control and just shoulder.
Yeah, that sucked.
The whole time.
Like, I mean, you proved Jermaine Duran to me got old. Nobody's surprised about that.
I thought she was going to win going in, but we'll get there.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, Damon Jackson, Alexander Hernandez, not to steal from my own Substack live blog, but Damon Jackson, Samson, hand in hand. They got their hair back, and now they're winning again, right?
Who the fuck is Samson?
Oh, you like don't know your body? Yeah. Come on, Daddy.
Okay, I didn't know you were going that far.
Damn. We're going Old Testament here.
Hey, too soon, Zane. Too soon. Slow your roll, bro. He's steadily turning into Luca Fury.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely. He'll be 7 feet tall before we know it.
Jackson, Alexander Hernandez. This mostly just felt like Alexander Hernandez is just never going to really turn the ship around, you know? Like, it's been such a long, slow crawl back to getting confident again after Donald Cerrone kicked his ass. And all along the way, people have just been figuring him out to the point that, like, Damon Jackson is kind of the worst athlete to ever beat you. And credit to Hernandez, he didn't fall apart in this fight. But he also just never could get it going until the third round, where he dropped Jackson and then still kind of got pushed around for the rest of the round.
Yeah, Jackson's a dog. He might not be hyper athletic, but he's a fucking dog.
He is.
Unless you like comically stop him.
Yeah. He gets hurt every single fight, which is the weird thing. Is like whenever I see Damon Jackson as a favorite, I'm always like, really? Because he gets hurt every fight. Every single one.
I think Nate the Train bit his style a little bit.
Yeah.
Jackson's been doing it for a minute since he didn't have hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, way back then.
But yeah, he gets a lot of good wins. He is a tough dude to put away. And Hernandez just, he's not going to be that dude. He had that glorious moment where he took out Beneil Dariush, and that was the high point, never to be captured again.
Yeah, he pissed off the MMA gods, man. You can't do that. And he's never evolved, you know.
Yeah.
He's never showed a new wrinkle that I've seen.
Well, the problem was that all the evolving he had to do was just learning how to be a confident fighter again after Donald Cerrone just schooled him and taught him that he could be broken in a fight and made to quit. And that took a lot out of him. He doesn't quit anymore, so he's evolved back to that point, but technically his game is not, hasn't changed.
Yeah, no, and like, to your point, if you go back and you watch both of these guys in between the first and second rounds, you see Jackson over there huffing and puffing. He don't know what's going on. He's like, he's out of it. He's struggling. His coaches are trying to reel him back in. You look at Hernandez, calm as day, not breathing heavy, and it's like, you're saving it. You're throttling. You can't throttle against Damon Jackson. You got to take him.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Can't be throttling.
Any obvious Damon Jackson fight? I mean, he can fight anybody. He's just an action dude that needs to be in action fights. But let's see. Is there anything that really springs to mind? I mean, put him in there against Nathaniel Wood. Has he fought Julian Arosa? If he has not fought Julian Arosa,
didn't Arosa just fight?
Yeah, Arosa just fought and won. So beat Ricardo Ramos. So yeah, Damon Jackson has not fought Julian Arosa. Those two dudes have to fight.
That's going to be a funky one,
right? I'm trying to look if he like they fought on the regionals or something, but no. Yeah, that'd be violent. It'd be a lot of fun. All right. That brings us to a featherweight bout, Jose Mariscal against Morgan Charrier. And
robbery.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I get it, because the first round was ugly. Charrier did, I scored it the first round and the second round for him. He should have won both of them. He landed all the better shots. He's got a very defensive, reactive style, though, and it judges, there's a reason he's lost a bunch of fights. Judges do not love a fighter that goes second. They just don't. It's a huge credit to Mariscal, who continues to shock me in the UFC. He just is a dude like coming in who's just like, okay, he's wild and sloppy and has been knocked out a few times. He'll be a fun action fighter and that's it. But he keeps winning, and credit to him, he turned it on in round three. Like, you got to give him that round.
100%. Yeah.
He won the third. He absolutely lost the second. And that first round,
he absolutely lost the first.
He definitely should have lost the first. The real egregious score there, I will say, is the judge who scored at 30-27 Charrier.
Yeah, that like, makes no sense. Is that the same one that 30-27 for Hernandez?
Oh, let me see. MMA
be waterboarded and find out what they're really working for. They're withholding information. We got to follow some money because these.
So Charrier was an Adelaide Bird scorecard. Oh, that was the 30-27.
That makes it worse.
And Allen versus Curtis was a the 49-46 there was Eric Colon.
And the Hernandez?
The Hernandez 30-27.
Don't say Adelaide Bird.
No, that was Minner. Really? That was Brian Minner.
Wow. Yeah. All three of them. Explain yourself.
It's just a weird night for judges. A whole bunch of people got... It's like the weight cuts. A whole bunch of people missed weight. A whole bunch of weird judging. I think everybody just hates the Apex.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
Eclipse.
Yeah. With it. Everybody's just pissed off about being there.
That's true, too. Even though you can have four of your friends and family escorted in for your fight and then kicked out the back yes. on Johnny Walker style.
That's right.
The fight is over.
Having to wait outside in the Vegas sun in the middle of the day. It's like 107 degrees out. And
with the other families?
That's right. Waiting like 2 hours for you to get cleared through medicals and all this.
Like I said, man, they should make the families fight.
That's right. Give them a whole... your family can have a whole section for the whole night if they can beat your opponent's family.
It's like King of the Mountain.
Yeah.
Right? You get the seats if your family keeps winning.
That's right. Then, yeah, you get to keep the seats. I'm for it. All right. Yeah, I'm just I think Charrier, he's still a great prospect. He is gonna have to learn to pick his pace up, but Mariscal is just he's another dude. Like you could do Damon. I don't like matching dudes off the same card, but you could do Damon Jackson, Jose Mariscal at some point.
Sure, it's gonna be a firefight.
It'd be a scrap.
Mariscal is fun, man. He's a ton of fun. He goes for it.
He does.
That's two dogs going at it, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. That brings us to a...
Robbery. Just had to say that one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Robbery. I had to get that in again.
Sure. Fair enough. That brings us to a lightweight bout. Ignacio Bahamondes, Christos Giagos. Kind of the only real highlight of the whole night. Honestly.
No way. We had that buzzer beater guillotine. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay, way down on the prelim. That's right.
Yeah.
Gene Matsumoto got a prelim guillotine. I forgot about that. So one of two highlights on the night.
That was it. Yeah.
That was it. Bahamondes, Giagos. I kind of knew Giagos would go in there and give Bahamondes exactly the fight that Bahamondes needs because Giagos hates to fight from range. And Bahamondes loves to fight in the pocket. So you're either going to have the tall guy getting range or winning a brawl inside. And eventually he just started landing some really slick kicks, and that was all there was to it. That head kick, that was as clean as I've seen in a while. Just like right here, man.
His foot was all weird. It was definitely like the instep. Like,
yeah.
He turned over instep too. It looked funky. It looked like he would have broken it. It's like he rolled his ankle on Yagos's face. but credit to Yagos for eating that fucking wheel kick to the head.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
And he just stood there. It's like, what the fuck?
Precursor of things to come, unfortunately, for him. But great win for Bahamondes. I'm trying to think, is there an obvious lightweight bout we need to see for him? What's I guess Thiago Moises recently got a win, or Mike Davis. That'd be fun.
Ooh.
Mike Davis only fights once every year and a half. So
I don't know if Mike would take that.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's the type of fight he wants. He wants established veterans past their prime.
Steve Garcia was back up at lightweight for his last fight, and he's been looking violent lately. 3 straight knockouts for him.
That's a good one. I see that.
Yeah. That's
a really good one.
That'd be a lot of fun. He's another dude that loves to brawl inside and actually has a pretty slick boxing game inside, too.
He will gladly meet Bahamondes in the pocket.
Yep. That'd be a lot of fun. All right. That gets us to our wild, sloppy brawl of the night. Charlie Campbell, Trevor Peak. And, man, Trevor Peak, he's working with Dwayne Ludwig now, right? That was who was in his corner?
Who? Dwayne Bang?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's got to stop that. Because, like, for the first round of this fight, he tried to be all controlled with Charlie Campbell and just went out there and kind of got his ass kicked. And then afterwards, second round, he just went bananas with, like, the hammer fists and, you know, going all, you know, Y'all-Qaeda on him. And that was like he won that round. That was a good, fun round. That was classic Trevor Peak. That's what he knows how to do. Him trying to fight technical, I don't need to see it.
No, it's not. No. It's not for the people.
Yeah. Fire Dwayne Ludwig. Go find Chris Lieben. See what he's doing these days for some coaching.
No. He needs to go train with Chepe Mariscal.
Yeah.
They need to get it in.
Indeed. So, yeah, fun fight. I'm sad to see Trevor Peak lose, but I'm sad no judge gave him round 2 where he landed his hammer fists.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. That probably would have happened if he threw a gun in the cage. Peak would have. Just think they should, you know.
He seemed like he trains those drills, right?
Yeah.
Put a wooden gun in there and you have to wrestle the other guy for it.
Just throw a 6-pack in there and they can fight over it and it'll feel just like Christmas.
Yeah, like a tribal tattoo or something.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to a welterweight bout. Alex Morono, Court McGee. I was hoping this fight would be kind of fun because Alex Morono usually kind of problem solves a little and like makes himself a tough fighter to beat out there. And like the vibes must have just been bad or something because he just kind of scraped by Court McGee in a very... Like, he didn't let Court McGee do anything after the first round, really, but...
I gave Court McGee the second round.
Yeah. Was it the second? I guess it was the second was the word.
He tried to play guard in the second.
That was
arm bars and triangles. Like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? You have his number on the feet. Stand with him.
Yeah.
And that was maybe him just getting a little cute.
I guess. It was
a lack of respect for the guy across from him, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It just felt like Morono didn't really have... He won, but it wasn't a great fight. It was a pretty lackluster showing against a dude who's 40 and actually like one of five fighters in the UFC slower than Alex Morono.
No, it's true. It's true. But I think McGee just signed a contract, didn't he?
Yeah, they just signed him to a new four-fight contract. One of the things, probably the most shocking thing I heard all night, honestly, was...
Well, I don't know, them scorecards, but...
Yeah.
What's to those? No, but it makes perfect sense. That's the best time to catch a guy. Coming off of two losses, that's when you want to negotiate their new contract.
Sure, but I love Court McGee, nothing against him, but what are you doing with the 40-year-old Court McGee? Like...
Cheap labor, man.
Yeah.
Cheap labor. I know.
All right. Let's not talk about it anymore. It's going to just make me depressed. Heavyweight fight. Lukasz Brzeski, Walter Walker. And
it's Walker. Come on, guys.
Come on. I'm sorry, but you give me a Walter, I'm not going to pronounce Walker. I'm just not. I'm not. I don't care.
It's Volkswagen.
Volkswagen, yeah. Walter Walker. I kind of thought Walker probably should have won this, but it was awful, so I don't care.
I scored every round for Brzeski.
Oh, yeah?
Just off of strikes.
Sure.
He was throwing strikes, and the other guy really wasn't.
Yeah, that's fine. Brzeski's just, he's going to struggle forever as a rare heavyweight without power. Like, how do you be that
big? Wrestle?
Like, how do you be that big and not be able to hurt people? You know? It's a problem.
Well, where I'm from, they call that big for nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it happens.
It is Brzeski's problem. I actually like, you know, he throws low kicks. He'll work a jab, cross. He's got some cardio and heart.
That is a slow leg kick.
The slow leg kick. And he just cannot seem to hurt anybody at this level.
Like that leg kick takes the bus there.
Yeah.
Slow. Nah, that's a really bad style for heavyweight.
It is.
It's really bad. He's not a great wrestler. He doesn't have great control.
He's been knocked out now, too, so it's not like his chin can't be cracked.
He shells up. He'll do the Chelsea Chandler sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Not to that degree, but not a good showing. Man, no. And what's crazy is if he fought like Johnny Walker, holy fuck.
Yeah, he's a giant.
But now
you're talking Walker or Brzeski here? I'm talking Brzeski.
Oh, I'm talking Walker.
No, Walker Brzeski to me is big for nothing. He just
Brzeski's big for nothing?
Yeah, he can't hurt anybody. He's a volume striker at heavyweight. He doesn't hurt anybody.
I think they're both big for nothing.
They are both big for nothing. Yeah.
They both can be true.
Yes, both can be true. It is very much too big for nothing, guys.
Now Brzeski is like Alexander Volkov light. He's like the Wish version of Volkov.
Yes, he is. I think somebody put it on Twitter that Brzeski looks like... No, it was in the thread. Somebody said Brzeski looks like trying to draw Alexander Volkov after two drinks.
That's funny. That's rich. I like that.
Yes.
Never thought of that. That's good.
All right. Before that, Norma Dumont beat Jermaine Durandamy. I was alongside other people who were like, this fight shouldn't really be on the on the prelims, because if Jermaine Durandamy wins, she's going to be in like title shot line, basically, you know?
Yeah.
But in retrospect, I'm really glad it was on the prelims, because Dumont, credit to her, it was a terrible fight, ugly, no fun at all. But she realized that there was one really easy path to victory, and she just stayed on it. And that's actually not been something Norma Dumont does all the time. So I will give her props for that. Like, you know, it wasn't fun, but Jermaine Durandamy's lost to two people in the past 15 years, and they're both Amanda Nunes, and you can just take her down and hold her. Okay, fine, whatever. You know?
Yeah. If I see anything remotely close to that again, she's going on that 7.5 minute round list.
Yeah, she's fair. Cruising. Fair.
Cruising. If her last fight wasn't so fresh in my mind, she would be on the list right now. I know this isn't how she normally fights.
Fair enough.
I guess we can give her a pass. But holy shit, that third round was the one of the most boring things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, most boring.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of jiu-jitsu matches. That was bad. That was bad. It was so bad that the referee was even, like, threatening to stand her up from side control at one point. Like, that's bad. It's just shoulder of justice.
Yeah.
And you have to discredit GDR here. Like, you can't fucking get up from side control?
Yeah. No kidding. I mean,
that's shameful.
It's not like, you know, you could say, oh, well, she took a few years off, but she showed up in shape. She, yeah, you know,
40 years old. Sure.
Yeah. She was in shape. She didn't look like somebody who hadn't been training, but her jiu-jitsu game has always been bad, and it just was a stark reminder that it's still bad. And, you know, also maybe how little actual, like, really heavy top control there is in women's MMA, that so few people have been able to do that to her.
It's also a reminder of how shitty that division is. Division sucks.
Yeah, yeah. I hate to rag on it, but it is.
Why?
Because
Why? Like, the division's trash.
It is, but it was like the benchmark women's division for years, and everybody gave it shit at the time when it was actually fun, and just because it was women, and now, like, coming up, we now have other good women's divisions that are fun to watch. So but it still feels a little weird to me to be like, man, women's bantamweight is just terrible. It is.
It's unfortunate.
It's reflected perfectly in men's heavyweight.
Yeah, but here's the thing: at least men's heavyweight, someone might just get knocked silly.
It's true.
That's not happening at 35.
No, but Breschke Walker, Dumont Durandamy back to back, that was a real vibe killer on this card.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of terrible MMA.
Yeah, it really covered the spectrum.
Yeah. All right. Now let's get to another fight that sucked. Bantamweight bout. Well, it was okay, but Victor Hugo, Pedro Falcao.
Oh, no, never mind. I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
It'd be like, what are you really, like, charging?
No. It was so bad, I didn't even write any notes for it.
Yeah. It was. I had picked Falcao going into this because he has top control and he knows how to keep it. And Hugo just likes to go for wild subs. And that worked for a round. And then Hugo figured out that he just didn't have to get taken down. And out-kickboxed Falcao barely while getting held against the cage a bunch for two rounds, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, it that fight added to the wall and stall narrative that was going on tonight.
Yeah, a bad bantamweight fight, really, bad men's bantamweight fight really is a true tragedy. Like, if you have a bad fight at men's, man, yeah, somebody noted 3 days' notice is not enough. Falcao was there on 3 days' notice.
True.
I can't really blame them for it, but I do feel like if you have a bad fight at men's bantamweight, then everybody should just get fired. Like, not allowed. It's, you know, it I is the always.
If you're going to give Norma Dumont a pass, we got to give these guys a pass for the short notice fight.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. We do. All right, that brings us to an actually good men's bantamweight fight. Gene Matsumoto, Dan Argueta, and I am doubly impressed about this fight because Argueta was having a lot of the success I thought he would have, which is that Matsumoto is actually used to being the guy that can wrestle on the Brazilian regional scene and being able to just stand flat-footed in front of people and have them not be able to overpower him for doing it. And Argueta went out there and he just bowled into him, took him down, was like, I'm as strong as you. I'm as fast as you. I can wrestle really well. I'm just going to go out there and put it on you. But man, credit to Matsumoto for always recovering, always finding a way to fight back to his feet, and then finding a way to make Argueta pay every single time, every single moment that he had free. And
that aggression Argueta had, that came with price. And that price was his gas tank.
Yeah.
That second round, I mean, he was not a sitting duck, but he was visibly fatigued to the point where he was face blocking.
Yeah, yeah.
The cleanest punches were landing, and it wasn't really rocking him, but they were just clean. He was doing no attempt to stop him or block him or anything.
Yeah, it's true. It is definitely, it's a problem. I mean, I've seen, like, the fight he had with Miles Johns, when Argueta can just, when he's not facing a very good striker, he will, even when he's tired, just keep wrestling at that pace forever. But he does get himself really tired. So it's just, to me, it's a show that Matsumoto is the prospect people thought he was. You know, the kid is powerful. He's fast. He's got a well-rounded game with a lot of tricks. And that was a nifty sub he hit to take Argueta out there right at the buzzer around two.
That's a high FIQ move.
Yeah.
That situational awareness is next level. He's like, okay, this guy is gassed and he's shooting in. I hear the 10-second clacks. Let me fucking jump this guillotine.
Yeah.
I don't get it, no big deal. But if I do, hell yeah. And he was so gassed. Dude, Argueta was so gassed in that guillotine that tapped and when Matsumoto let go, the dude was like still kind of almost going out.
Oh yeah, no, he
had no clue where he was.
I think he didn't realize he tapped. He was like trying to argue with the ref and like trying to figure out what was going on afterward.
Where he was.
Yeah.
The window closed on him. It got like right here.
And yep. He came back. And the body, like when you're there, the body will just make a reaction. You'll just, you know, your body will start saving itself.
Well,
so.
I think what happened was like he was like, Argueta is like, okay, it's the point to tap, and so he tapped, but the amount of time from him tapping to the ref stepping in
was
just enough for him to like kind
of come out. Yeah. Great win for cool, dude. Matsumoto.
1 second left. But honestly, that could have been an instant where even if the ref didn't stop it at that 1 second, the next second he might have been out. So we could have got
a
full submission.
As time forward. Round can't save you. If you can't return to your seat, then you're done. As, what was it? Merab Dvalishvili once infamously found out.
Oh, yeah, true.
That brings us, though, to a middleweight bout. Cesar Almeida, Dylan Budka. And, was kind of the fight I expected. Budka's a decent, strong athlete without any real game to speak of, who just had to go out there and try to be physical with Almeida. And Almeida has a really limited game, but he's powerful when he can hit you. And he just started teeing off on Budka whenever Budka would latch on to him.
What I loved is the second Budka got a takedown, Almeida instantly starts butt scooting backwards to the
right away.
Like, he knows exactly what to do. He knows how to be calm when he's in those bad positions. It seems like he trains it a lot.
Yep.
He gives himself chances to get back to his feet. And once he's there, he's got the tools to really fuck people up.
Yeah. I'm still not sure that his striking game is all that well suited to MMA. So I don't know how, you know, and he's also in his late 30s now, or mid 30s, 36. So I don't know how long he's just going to be, how much of a run he's going to make at middleweight, but he'll be fun every fight he's in, you know, they'll be violent.
It wouldn't take much to send him up the rankings, honestly.
Yeah. Middleweight is that division where you can fight this dude and then you could fight Abdul Razak Al Hassan. And then you could fight like, you know, Marc-Andre Barrio and like, just literally never fight anybody who's going to effectively wrestle you at all.
Right.
And there you go.
And then you're fighting Roman Dolidze. And you're
yeah. All right. For that, Nora Cornell against Melissa Mullins. And I was feeling really stupid for picking Cornell for about 3 or 4 minutes. For the most of the first round. Because she was... I did not really realize just how easy to back up she is and how easy to, like, cow she is, even as a striker. And Mullins is, she is nothing if not aggressive to a fault. And so she got that takedown. It's like, ah, damn it. But, man, Mullins' wrestling game is terrible. And one takedown does not make a fight. And she could never find another one. And then it's, you're standing there clinching with somebody who's a way better clinch fighter than you.
Striking with someone who's a way better striker than you.
Yeah. Striking with somebody who's a way better striker than you.
Way better gas tank.
Yep.
Way better fighter. Yeah.
Yeah.
It became blatantly clear that Mullins was one-dimensional out there.
No, yeah. She
had zero venom.
Yep. So, solid win for Cornell, but her game still really makes me feel a lot of... this is not going to be successful long term.
I love that she attacked the body, though.
Yeah, no, definitely. She knows how to throw some fun combos. She's a great clinch fighter, but she just, you know, you got to stay off the cage. Because moving to bantamweight is full of women who will just run you into the fence and try to drag you to the mat.
Yeah, and also full of people who suck. Come on now.
Fair enough. Yeah, all right. Well, there wasn't a lot to talk about on this card, honestly. Alan gets...
The biggest news story is John Jones.
Yeah, no kidding.
...to kill the drug tester, which I didn't even know the UFC had drug testers. They might be the most insane part of all of this. Like, the UFC is actually drug testing people? Shut up.
Yeah. You knew that they're at least making a show. They caught Wal Harris, Eddie. They caught Wal Harris. They didn't just do that with phantoms and ghosts.
USADA caught him. USADA is the ghost of drug test past.
But yeah, no, this John Jones thing, just really dumb. I mean, I don't know what happened. But there is that video of John Jones drunk off his ass heckling a stand-up comedian from a couple months ago. And this is a dude who a couple of years ago was telling everybody that he was absolutely done drinking because he clearly couldn't handle it. And doesn't seem like he's done. So I kind of have to lean on the drug testing story side here. It's not like John Jones put a statement out on this too, out already on his social media on Instagram. Didn't actually refute anything that the people said in their police report. He said it was a birthday party, so he gets to do what he wants. And he said that they were really unprofessional. And he's mad about that. And it's like, okay, well, that in no way refutes the idea that you took somebody's phone, may have threatened to kill somebody, and everybody felt like you were a hair's breadth away from doing something stupidly violent.
Remember when he told DC that he would kill him if he spit in his face? Like, he'd literally kill him.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not a good look, man. I don't...
Well,
but here's the thing. The people who did the drug testing... they left with a sample.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Job, mission complete.
That's some gangster shit. Right? You go through all that, and at the end of the day, you're leaving with the sample? Like, that's gangster. They left with a sample.
Yeah, score one for them. And apparently then, you know, the Drug Free Sport International telling them not to file a report or anything. And
I know, that's crazy too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
the ironic part of all of this is how you know, the UFC had the falling out with USADA over the Conor McGregor thing. And now this happens, like year one with this new testing company. They're already in a legal bind with John Jones, the heavyweight champion of the UFC. What?
They also have the high five from Bone. Somebody, as Joe Buescher noted, yeah, I watched that footage. If John Jones had just been threatening me and then wanted a high five, I'd high five him. I would not be like, no, I'm leaving you hanging, bro. Like, yes, okay, get me out of here. Thank you. Yeah, good job.
Yeah. And wasn't he complaining about it being early? Like, there's
and it was 4 p.m. in the afternoon. Like, why do you always come so early?
Oh, man. A lot of juice, but way more fascinating and intriguing than anything on this call.
Yes. I write an editorial for every Sunday for my Substack. It's just Zane Simon at zanesimon.substack.com. I'm not trying to be fancy with this shit. Done trying all the MMA whatever names, all that crap. And the moment that dropped today, that news dropped, I was like, oh, hey, I don't have to pay attention to this card at all for writing an editorial for tomorrow. I'm just going to write about that. Like, there's nothing that's going to happen on this card that I need to care about.
It's also crazy how John Jones always finds a way into the headlines around big UFC number pay-per-views.
Man has, he has his way. He and Conor McGregor both. Mm-hmm. They make sure that if there's a big event going on and they're not a part of it, they will be a part of it.
But the thing is, like, people always give John Jones shit about not being a stand-up character, I guess, in the public eye. And it's like, this is not new. Like Mike Tyson, you know what I mean? Like, they're fighters. We forget they're fighters. They fight in a cage for money.
The thing with John Jones that gets him all the shit is that he is just inherently a duplicitous person. He wants to be liked, and he always puts on a face and a show like he is a really clean cut Christian.
He knows what's expected.
Knows what's expected, and he tries to live up to it. Ian Gary has the same thing. He doesn't get into any of the trouble John Jones does, but it's the same reason people are always like, oh, Ian Gary's so fake, is because he's always trying to be like really have this presentable professional thing, and then on the sly being like, and here's my trolling, oh my god, I can't believe you said that thing, and being like just a little shit, and everybody's like, okay, I hate this dude. Mm-hmm. And John Jones has the I'm a clean cut upstanding Christian boy, and also I might get really drunk and threaten to kill you, and people are like, okay, come on, dude, you get like, he gets all the shit for being fake. If he was just out, like, people love Mike Tyson and he is unhinged. You know, you talk about the Mike Tyson comparison. Mm-hmm. People never stopped loving Mike Tyson, and he was just fucking crazy all the time.
The media went after him, though.
The media went, but people didn't. Fans didn't.
Yeah.
Fans stuck with him the whole damn time because there's no duplicitousness with Mike Tyson. He is the crazy guy.
He had some kickback after the ear-biting thing. I know a lot of people.
Yeah, sure. But even still, like, it didn't last. Yeah. It's just because if you're one kind of person all the time, people get forgiving. Even if that person is awful, people adjust.
Well, but you're talking about authenticity.
Yes. When you're two people all the time, people are always uncomfortable with you.
Yeah, because they don't know who they're getting. And it's hard to trust somebody like that.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Honestly, anyway, that's why I pride myself on being me. So no matter where you catch me, I'm the same motherfucker on this platform.
That's right.
Platform, real life, on the phone, a text. I'm the same fucker.
12 from 12 from 12 a.m. to 12 p.m.
That's right. Round the clock.
Round the clock. Awful.
Consistently awful.
That's right.
To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.